name is Paul Wilkinson. I'm not on your program. Jeff's son, one of four. Donna's, Donna and Grandpa Frank's grandson. Sorry, I'm nervous. I just learned about this whole idea of all the grandchildren coming up and saying something, so I didn't know everyone was going to rush off the stage, but I hope you don't mind. I wanted to say something about my grandfather, but I kind of got a little lost for words, and I feel like, well, I just hope you don't mind that I'd like to sing just part of a song that I once sang for Frank and Donna. It's called The Hem of His Garment. Oh, there was a woman in the Bible days. She had been sick so very long. But she heard my Jesus was passing by. So she joined the gathering throng. And while she was pushing her way through, someone asked her, "What are you trying to do?" She said, "If I can just touch the hem of his garment, I know I'll be made whole." She cried, "Whoa, whoa, Lord, whoa, whoa, Lord, whoa, Lord." Said, "If I just touch the hem of his garment, I know I'll be made whole right now."
But I didn't even realize about that singer of that generation, Paul Wilkinson, and then Paul Robeson Wilkinson, and also that was Tyler Childers, who spoke earlier, and Eli Nakowitz, who is one of the living legends of Los Angeles. Okay, let's see. Now it really is, we really do mean it, that if you want to come up to speak, if you want to get up close here, and the first, and we wanted to have Rachel Rosen DeGolia, the Chicago Cleveland connection here. Okay.
Staff that are going to come up together. I think we've all been staff of regional and Carroll offices, as well as national staff. I bring a message from one of Frank's contemporaries and comrades in arms. If ever were an American Tom Paine envisioned, it would be Frank Wilkinson. He believed it was not only a right, but a duty of a good citizen to speak out. No matter how high the position, whether public servant, king, or president who abused his power, Frank was the first to speak truth to power. His comment would be very simple. "Bugger off, Studs Terkel."
I'm Mike Honey. I had the privilege of being the regional director in the South for the National Committee Against Requested Legislation for 6 years. And so Frank and I did a lot of those traveling around the South kind of journeys in the car. And this is a message from Ann Braden, who was she would have liked to have been here, but she's getting on in years, and she asked if I would read this for her. I think Frank would want it brought out, and Ann certainly did, about the mainline connection between the Southern Black freedom struggle and the Civil Liberties battle, and Frank's connection to that being so crucial. A number of the people that I met when I was working as a staff in the South had been working with Frank for a long time. C.T. Vivian, John Lewis were co-chairs of our organization. Tenille Black in Chicago. There were a lot of people involved in the Black Freedom Movement who were close advisors to Frank and to N. Carl. And this is from Ann. I want to be sure that attention is called to what I think is the most important thing Frank did with his life. He was one of the key people in a campaign at a critical moment to link the struggles against racism in this country to the battle for civil liberties and the right to organize. He and Carl Braden and I and a number of other people worked together very intensely at that challenge in the late 50s and the 1960s. And there's been reference to the photo of Dr. King and Carl Braden and Frank. And Frank told me about that a lot of times, that, yeah. But I think you probably know, but the reason that Carl Braden went to prison first was a sedition charge where he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. And the story was that he sold a home to a Black family in Louisville, and the Klan bombed the home, and then the state charged Carl for buying the home to have them bomb the home so that we would set up insurrection against the state. So he was charged with sedition. And Frank, of course, was having his blacklisting in LA at the same time, and he started to help the Bradens, who went on a campaign to free Carl, who spent 9 months in solitary confinement, his hair turned white, and they ultimately beat that 15-year prison sentence. Next thing they were connected was in 1958, QAC was holding hearings in Atlanta against the Freedom Movement, and they brought in Carl to testify, and Carl asked Frank to come support him, and as soon as Frank got there, he walked into his hotel room, bang, and handed him a subpoena. And so they both went to prison together over that, and nobody would stand up for them in the South except a few people like John Coe, who was a lawyer from Florida, and Martin Luther King and the associates in the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. I know James Lawson is here with us tonight. And those people stood strongly against HUAC. They stood against the whole onslaught against civil liberties because the issues of civil rights and the Black freedom struggle were so intertwined, and there was no doubt about that. And Frank understood that. And to finish, what Ann wanted to say was that the result was one of the most powerful people's movements that developed in this century, the Black Freedom Movement of the 20th century. I'm convinced that this movement was what made it possible, ultimately, to abolish HUAC and also to save the Bill of Rights so that at least some people could live to fight another day. I think this message of Frank's life is especially important for us to hear today because of the current situation, so similar to and yet different from the 1950s. Again, we are at a moment when the Bill of Rights and the possibility of democracy itself and perhaps the very existence of life on the planet hang in the balance. The fate and very lives of people of color in this country also hang in the balance. We'll win again if we do again what we did in the 50s and 60s, join a new offensive against racism and join it with the battle for civil liberties. So far, that's not happened. The civil liberties battle and the struggle against racism need to be connected. I think the challenge of Frank's life to all of us is to see that this does happen, and I believe that's the best memorial we can create for him.
Incredible. always equals, but he was always my mentor, and I owe him a great deal because he made such an impact on my life. I have a message from the Chicago Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights that they asked I read to you. At the meeting of January 16, 2005, the Board of the Chicago Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights unanimously adopted a resolution expressing our condolences to the family of Frank Wilkinson, our sense of the great loss to the cause of civil liberties which his passing represents, and our commitment to carry on the work which he initiated, including the founding of this organization. We join the vast community that is fighting to preserve our rights in mourning the loss of this extraordinary leader. Thank you.
Hero, he's one of the greatest men, and I co-published a legal magazine, and we did an interview, and we had a whole crew, and we met, and we talked, and we went on and on, we had our interview questions, and we weren't able to ask any questions, because Frank ran the whole interview. And he was animated, and up and down, and pulling out exhibits, footnotes throughout the whole thing, and we really connected, and at the end, he's asking, how did you get to be the way you are? Which he's always asking people. And I tell him my story, and I ask him, well, how did you get to be the way you are? And he said, you know, I'm deaf. When I went to UCLA, I was too vain to have a hearing aid. So throughout the whole time I was there, I didn't hear one lecture. So that's how I got to be the way I was.
On behalf of the Communist Party and also as a member of the Chicano generation here in Los Angeles, that I'm here to bring condolences and honor the memory of a hero that fought for democracy, justice, and peace in our nation and the world. I met Frank, I was introduced to Frank by Bert Corona and a group of us Chicano activists. Bert wanted us to learn about lobbying, especially on a national level, about people's rights. And we learned a lot from Frank, as one that grew up in the Methodist Church, about the importance of being a circuit rider and to get out there in the circuit and ride and get the good news out to the people that we can fight for justice. And right now, a lot of that justice fight is in the Judiciary Committee of the Senate. We need to keep on fighting on the Alito nomination, on the Patriot Act, on the spy, and on the immigration, the temporary worker, the citizen bringer attack that we're facing, and many other things.
My name is Phyllis Tau Greenleaf. At the age of 8, I got into the front seat of Frank's car because he was not only my driver, but he was became my camp counselor at Haskell's Rascals Day Camp. If there are any other Haskell Rascals, let's find each other. All of our counselors were blacklisted. It was a great camp. I'm going to jump 10 years after that, age of 18 or 19 in college. Frank calls me from Manhattan. Phil, I'm going to prison tonight. You want to have dinner? So I took a train down to Manhattan, and Frank and I went out to dinner. Then we went to Penn Station. I was crying. We hugged each other. He said, carry on the good fight. And I saw Frank off to prison at Penn Station. The last little part is, while I worked with Frank and others to abolish the House Un-American Activities Committee, as did my mother, Bert Taub, I am now working with people to abolish No Child Left Behind, which is fundamentally a racist, classist, awful education policy. And if people are interested in my website that will be going online and my book, which I'm finishing now, please come and talk to me. Frank, you made me a lifelong activist, and I'm still at it.
I'm Jan Goodman, and I'm here to honor Frank for myself and also my parents, Adele and O'Neill Cannon, at the Paul Robeson Community Center. My life is intertwined with Frank's from long before I was born. My aunt, my grandparents, Morris and Sadie Goodman worked with him. And the thing that I want everyone to think about here today is not just how the struggles are intertwined, but also how our lives are intertwined with each other in this room. I look around and I see people from so many different parts of my life, and how important the actual social structure of the struggle for social change, how important that is to ourselves and our lives, and how important it is to keep in touch and to move forward with all of our friends and associates and comrades and whatever we want to call them. Don't war, organize.
My name is Scarlett Tsai, and I work with Frank at the First Amendment Foundation in the fall of 1993, shortly after I graduated. I'm talking fast, I'm trying to get through this. And I think, we all have a lot of things to say about Frank, but I think the thing that struck me the most about Frank is that even though 60 years kind of spent, we know that's the difference in our ages. We instantly clicked, and he had this gift for reaching across generations. And I'm teaching everyone, I'm sorry, I'm pregnant and totally hormonal and stuff. But I find that my life seems to come full circle. I worked with Frank in 1993, and I now find myself working with an organization that looks to develop and build affordable housing. And I think he's touched my life in many ways that will always be with me. So, I bid him a fond and loving farewell. Thank you.
My name is Susan Dawson. Thank you for honoring Frank as a communist, because that's how I met him, through my parents, Emily and Lori Dawson. And Frank is one of the people that has always lived in my heart. It's just his wonderful spirit. Only one story. When I was 12 years old, this is the end of the story that my fellow Haskell Rascal told. When I was 12 years old, Frank got out of jail. And I went to a mass meeting with my parents. And he came out on the stage like this, and people applauded. And when the applause was over, he looked in the audience and he said, "We must do something about prison reform."
Good afternoon. I just want to say that Frank touched my heart quite a bit, my soul, in a lot of ways. And definitely I'll miss him. And he and Don try to set me up with different people as well, so they're funny.
Hi, my name is Katie Roberts, and I have the privilege of working in Washington with Kit Gage at NPL. And I'm actually going to read just a quick couple paragraphs from Connie Hogarth, whom many of you know, I'm sure. She was a longtime NPL activist in New York, and she sent Donna this message. "Dear Donna, Frank was a gift to us all, to you and your great family, and to the movement for social change he loved. He was a larger-than-life force for integrity and decency in the never-ending struggle for civil liberties, justice, and peace. But as well, he was an irresistible, delightful, warm, and loving human being, impossible not to love and cherish, except by the likes of J. Edgar Hoover and Joe McCarthy. From the moment I met Frank in the earliest days of NCARL, I knew I had found a friend for life. If ever there was a time, we needed Frank's courage, vitality, commitment, and brilliance, and his ability to reach and teach young people through his own history in the struggle for First Amendment rights, it is in these bleakest of times. So, we cannot fail him. It's up to us now to do his work without him, but always carrying him with us as a beacon of light and hope and boundless energy to assure that the Bill of Rights and this democracy survive. With sadness for losing him, but joy for having known him, Connie Hogarth."
Keep your faith in the First Amendment and People's Movements. Joshua Wilkinson.